And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this rainy Tuesday evening. Rainy but not windy, so everybody can just calm down already. And what is this? There's all kinds of things greeting me here in the studio. There's apparently two wild dogs roaming campus. Wolves? Dogs? What are they? They're missing Alaskan Huskies. Wow. And that's a big deal around here, isn't it? Well, okay, you know what, if you see, I don't know if this is someone's personal note or whatever, I'm not going to give out the guy's home phone number, but if you see two Alaskan Huskies that look like they don't belong, or even if you see two Alaskan Huskies that look like they do belong, call us here at the radio station, 631-632-6901. Actually, you know what, you don't need the area code or the exchange. If you're on campus, you just have to dial 26901, and I don't know how you'd be seeing them if you weren't on campus. If you're in Alaska, for instance, and you see a couple of Alaskan Huskies, odds are it's not the ones that we're looking for. Are we looking for this? Is this a USB project now? Why not? Yeah, well, we can't fix things, so we might as well find dogs. I'm down. I'll go dog hunting, in the good sense. I mean, do people go out and hunt dogs? I guess in some parts of the world. Way off topic of what I want to talk about here. I just found this out, actually, coming into the studio. I always find things out when I'm coming into the studios. I don't know anything until I walk through these doors, and all of a sudden it hits me like a sack of, wet cement? Is that what you get hit with? Marvin Miller, you know that name? Yeah, you know, for those of us who grew up during one of the baseball strikes, I'm not sure which one, we almost have as many sporting strikes as we do sporting series now. The great baseball strike of 1981. Oh, that was a good one. They don't have strikes like that anymore, do they? Well, anyway, Marvin Miller was the executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association, which meant that his name was on everyone's mind during that summer, that dark summer of 1981, where we had no baseball. Except for minor league baseball, which actually, you know what, I think that should be the baseball people follow, because you can identify with people in minor leagues a lot more than you can in major leagues. I mean, you see the salaries these guys get? That's probably something that Marvin Miller would not like me saying, but come on already. Tens of millions of dollars, and it's just really insane. But it's our fault because we pay to see it, and if we all just stopped paying, then it wouldn't exist anymore. Now, you know, no disrespect meant towards people that are good at swinging bats and throwing balls places and getting them into things. Come on already. You know, there's all sorts of other things that I think are more important, a lot more important, that, you know, just one of your salaries could probably fix a highway or have a high-speed rail line installed someplace. Think about that. And you could probably find something else to do because, well, you know, being strong and apparently good at aiming things, well, you could probably find all sorts of lines of work that would be appropriate for that. It just seems ridiculous, you know, and it seems even more ridiculous when people who are making so much money are going out on strike. Obviously, they're striking for the people that don't make as much money, too, but it's all a bit silly and inflated and crazy, and I sure wish, you know, we'd come back down to reality. You know, I mean, everybody who makes this huge amount of money can afford to pay to play rather one season without getting paid a dime, just to say thank you to the fans. They could do that. Imagine the impact that would have. But of course, it's fantasy. We know that. Anyway, Marvin Miller, yeah, he was the like I said, the executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association, otherwise known as the MLBPA. And he was in the thick of it all, and he died today. He died today, November 27th, 2012, at the ripe old age of 95. And apparently he was able to negotiate a long life. He was good. He really was. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it's a milestone, a name that that you recognize from the past. You wonder, hey, whatever happened to that guy? You know, you could have told me he died 20 years ago, and I probably would have believed you because I just haven't been keeping up on these things. But it does bring back memories of a particular time on this very radio station where we attempted to, as we are prone to do, dive right into the story. Because that's what we do in radio. We dive in. Sometimes the pool is empty when we dive in, but we do it anyway. And we always learn something. So, yeah, back in the thick of the baseball strike, we did that. We made a phone call. Now, the thing is, things don't always work out. And that's the beauty of live radio. You never know what might happen. This 50 minutes that we have left, nobody knows what's going to happen. Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? And, of course, you can be part of the show later by calling in. But what I want to play for you now is actually we have that piece that we recorded back then in 1981. Can you imagine that? All the way back then we recorded this. This is our attempted call to Marvin Miller in the thick of the baseball strike. Let's listen.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We've taken the liberty of calling up a fellow who's near and dear to any of us sports fans. This is just another in a long line of Radio Free Weekend interviews. We called up Marvin Miller. Now, if you're not familiar, he's the head of the negotiating team for the baseball players. And we got him on the line. He's on hold to his home in California right now. Hello, are you there?
Hello?
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 This is Radio Free Weekend calling from Long Island.
Well, what do you want with me?
Well, we'd like to know your opinion on your negotiations. How are they going?
Negotiations?
Yes, the negotiations. How are they going?
Which negotiations are you talking about, fella?
Well, I'm talking about the baseball player negotiations.
Oh, good. I don't care about the baseball stuff. I've got more important things in my mind than baseball, you know that?
I beg your pardon. Well, you are deeply involved with this, aren't you?
Why should I be deeply involved with this? It doesn't concern me at all. I don't care about people hitting balls with sticks and running around in circles. What should that have to do with me?
It doesn't concern you in the least?
Of course not. Well, does it concern... I mean, look, Bobby, do you really care about, you know, baseball? It's a game. Come on.
What?
So they have a little fight and they go running home. Okay. It's not to bother me. Why should I be concerned about it?
Well, I realize it's a game, but you are, in fact, the chief negotiator for the baseball players, aren't you? It says all the news.
This guy said I was involved in the baseball strike. Oh, yeah, are you crazy or something?
Says who? Says all the major news services. Marvin Miller, right?
No. Look, I told you before, if you'd listen to me and just shut up your big mouth for one second, you might understand something. My name is Marvin Muller, not Marvin Miller. Marvin Muller. I have nothing to do with this baseball strike. Do you understand that?
You're Marvin...
You're not the first person to do this to me. I'm really getting sick of it, all right?
You're Marvin Muller?
I'm Marvin Muller.
Not Marvin Miller.
No, I have nothing to do with this. I don't care about it. Do you understand that?
I think I do, but... Well, wait a minute. Well, we better get on the news service. They sent us your phone number, then.
They're sending my phone number out now.
Yeah, so you're probably bound to get a lot of more...
I'm going to have to get the phone number changed now, you understand?
Yeah, you're bound to get a lot more phone calls before too long.
Well, I'm just going to leave the phone off the hook, anything like that.
Oh, okay. Well, since we did make this long-distance phone call, you already told us that you really don't care about the baseball strike.
I don't care about the baseball strike. As far as I'm concerned, it can go on forever.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you do?
You really want to know what I do?
Well, yeah, since it would be of interest to our listeners... Paperclips.
I work in a paperclip factory. Yes, I'm in charge of the process where they're curled.
Right there in Los Angeles?
Yes. And I have nothing to do with baseball, nothing to do with the baseball strikes. We go through entire working days, entire working weeks, without ever once saying the word baseball.
Oh, really? Well, don't you sell paperclips to the baseball teams?
No, we don't sell paperclips. That's maybe another company located in Paducah, Kentucky.
Oh, I see. But you only curl them.
I'm in charge of the curling. We make the entire thing. We make the whole paperclip at our factory. It comes to our factory. It's one long metal bar. Not really a bar. It's a very small piece of metal. And what we do is we curl it. We have somebody else twist it around in a certain way. And then one final person checks it on a piece of paper to make sure it works.
Oh, I see.
And I've been doing this for about 12, 15 years. It's quite interesting. You don't really care about this. Why in the world are you asking me about paper clips?
Well, because we have you on...
I have more important things, but the Bernie Miller's on right now. I really would appreciate it if you go back to whatever you're doing, leave me alone, and just goodbye.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Another one in a continuing series of Radio Free Weekend interviews. Stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that was embarrassing, wasn't it? That's why it said do not play. Okay. Makes us look like a bunch of idiots. All right, you know, so we called the wrong person. That was Marvin Mueller. I wonder how he's doing so many years later. Barney Miller, too, a Barney Miller fan. Wow, it sure brings you back, doesn't it? And did you hear the tweep when he hung up? When he hung up in anger, it was a long-distance call. In fact, you could hear the sound of the long distance. Well, you heard that little chirp, and that, my friends, is the 2600 hertz tone that you used to hear on long-distance phone calls. Yeah, and if you blew that tone, you could disconnect the phone yourself and make all kinds of free calls, but we're not going to get into that right now. But, yeah, that was our phone call attempting to get into the thick of the news. We did all kinds of things back in the day. We called the embassy building in Tehran in the middle of the hostage crisis. All of this is available online, by the way, if you go to www.2600.com and go to the radio section. And you'll find things under the Voice of Long Island. You'll find things under brain damage. You'll find things under Off the Hook and Off the Wall. All kinds of amazing. That was just taken right off the web just now. Amazing how much history is out there if you just look for it. Anyway, rest in peace, Marvin Miller. I don't know who's going to negotiate the next baseball strike, but I'm sure there's a whole line of people just waiting for the opportunity. Like I said, we'll be taking phone calls a little bit later on because we haven't done that in a while. Not to a great extent, anyway. We've really had so many things happening, you know, so many upheavals and disruptions in our lives. They continue. They continue to this day. I got a lot of mail, actually, about the whole Twinkie thing. We talked about that last week, the Twinkie shortage. Well, apparently it's still going on, except now they're starting to get stale, and that will happen. I don't think anyone has taken on the Twinkie name, so we might be in for a long, dry spell without those, you know, it's part of our history. It's part of who we are. But you know what? It's not that big a deal. It really is not that big a deal. Like one reader wrote in to us, why are we focusing so much on Twinkies and how come we have completely ignored Yodels? Yodels are, of course, also affected by Hostess going out of business, as are Ding Dongs and Cupcakes, Wonder Bread, all kinds of things. And I do have to confess to a certain bias. There was something about, I guess, the Twinkie that seems pure and kind of, I don't know, the representative product of all of this. You know, the nice golden sponge cake with white cream in the middle. And you know, they're trying to sell the ones with the dark cream in the middle. Doesn't work the same way. So, yeah, there is definitely something. There is a bias towards these particular products and away from the other ones. But it is just as sad. I do hear what's being said here. Just as sad to be losing so many of these brands, of these things that we've grown up with. But you know what? We got to get over it. We got to move on. But there is a correction that another reader wrote into alert me to, and that was concerning the Ding Dong, and the Ding Dongs are, of course, also affected by this. Now, the Ding Dong, according to the Wikipedia page, yeah, there is a Wikipedia page on Ding Dong. In fact, there's a Wikipedia page on all of these things. So if you think I'm an idiot for talking about this for so long, yeah, point your finger at Wikipedia, because they're devoting valuable disk space to this as well. The Ding Dong and Bandwidth. It's a chocolate cake most recently produced and distributed by Hostess Brands. It's round with a flat top and bottom, about 3 inches in diameter, a little more than an inch high, similar in shape to a hockey puck. But you wouldn't know that because they're on strike. A white creamy filling is injected into the center, and a thin coating of chocolate glaze covers the entire cake. The cake was originally wrapped in a square of thick aluminum foil, enabling it to be carried to lunches, in lunchboxes, that is, without melting the chocolate glaze. They thought of everything. They really did. Now, I mistakenly said last week that the Ding Dong was forced to rename itself to the King Don, due to a controversy involving people who were offended by the name Ding Dong as a derogatory term towards mentally deficient people. And apparently there's no truth to that whatsoever. I thought there was, and apparently I've been spreading that rumor myself without realizing it, but that's not why they had to rename the Ding Dong to the King Don. It had to do with, and I should have remembered this, I should know my history, but, you know, I kind of spaced out in those classes, the great ring-ding-ding-dong conflict, which you may recall, you should recall, back in, what was it, 1987, was it? Yeah, basically, they marketed the snacks on the East Coast as Big Wheels, to avoid, wait a minute, hold on a second, yeah, they marketed it as Big Wheels to avoid confusion with Ring Dings, which was similar, and it pre-existed, and it was made by Drake's Cakes. Now, the names were consolidated in 1987. That was when a short-lived merger of Drake's with Hostess, whose parent company then was called Continental Baking Company, but of course we all know that, it briefly resolved the whole ring-ding-ding-dong conflict. Now that I say it, now that I say ring-ding-ding-dong conflict, it's coming back to me now, I do remember. When the merged company broke up, however, Hostess was forced to cease once again using the ding-dong name in areas where ring-dings were available. And you tell me an area where ring-dings are not available. Yeah, it's not easy. The compromised sound-alike name King Don lasted until Interstate Bakeries Corporation, which had recently merged with Hostess's parent company, bought Drake's in 1998. The Hostess product is now sold under the name Ding Dongs again through the United States. But in Canada, you can still find King Dons. Nobody knows why. And, of course, you can't find any of them anymore because Hostess is out of business. Yeah, I could go on. There's more, but enough already. It's just insane how we cling to these things. But, yeah, ding-dongs, too. You'll have a hard time finding those. People are selling them on eBay for obscene amounts, and I think people who buy them will be very disappointed once they arrive. And, of course, you know, at some point, another company will take over and probably use the name, and they'll look back on this period of history as probably the dumbest time ever. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Sandy, because it's still on our minds here. We're still feeling the effects of it. Still seeing trees down every place, and people are cutting up branches and repairing homes, and still pumping out water in various places we didn't think water could get to. But trees in particular were something we witnessed here on the North Shore more than anybody, I think. And they fell, according to this article in the Wall Street Journal, they fell by the thousands like soldiers in some vast battle of giants, dropping to the earth in submission to a greater force. Actually, it's the Associated Press. It was printed in the Wall Street Journal, probably in a lot of newspapers, and we may never know who penned these particular words, but might be for the best. The winds of Superstorm Sandy took out more trees in the neighborhood's parks and forests of New York and New Jersey than any previous storm on record. That's according to the experts, and the experts tend to know these things. Nearly 10,000 were lost in New York City alone. 10,000 trees. Did you know New York City had 10,000 trees? Yeah, well, it doesn't anymore. 10,000 of them are gone. Thousands upon thousands went down on Long Island. I would bet we lost more than 10,000 trees if New York City lost that many. New Jersey utilities reported more than 113,000 destroyed or damaged trees. These are perfectly healthy trees, some more than 120 years old, that have survived hurricanes, ice storms, nor'easters, two world wars, anything Mother Nature could throw their way. I added the wars in. That's according to Todd Forrest. Really? Your last name is Forrest, Vice President of the New York Botanical Garden. I guess, you know, you just got the job for that reason. Makes me doubt anything you say from this point on. Sorry. Sandy was just too much, according to Mr. Forrest. As oaks, spruces, and sycamores buckled, many became Sandy's agents, contributing to the destruction by crashing through houses or tearing through electric wires. And, you know, this is serious because they caused a number of deaths, including probably one of the most tragic, those of two kids playing in their suburban family room, inside their home, playing inside, and a tree comes crashing through. They left hundreds of thousands of people without power for more than a week. Some still have no power. Some are having power glitches. As homeowners and public officials deal with the cleanup, some tree care experts say the shocking force of the storm weeks ago might mean they should reassess where and how to replant. When trees go down that have lived a long life and been so beneficial, it's terrible when they cause injury to people and property, said Nina Basuk, program leader at the Urban Horticulture Institute at Cornell University. We have to replant better and do it smarter. For example, she said shorter trees like hawthorns and crabapples should be planted below electric wires. How about we put the electric wires underground? Has anyone ever thought of that? Apparently not. She also said a soil substitute can help trees extend their roots beneath pavement, so maybe they can keep their balance in high winds. Frank Giuliano, executive director of the Reeves Reed Arboretum in Summit, New Jersey, which lost uncounted trees on its perimeter, said those might not be replaced. Would they just come down again, he asked. This is a global issue. We all have to deal with the ramifications of what's happening with our world and environment. But Bram Gunther, chief of forestry, horticulture, and natural resources for the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation, said some trees may have been planted where they shouldn't have been. And you have other infrastructure conflicts. You don't stop planting trees. He said last week that the city had counted 9,662 downed trees on its streets and in its parks after Sandy and the nor'easter that followed. That's more than the combined total from tornadoes in 2010 and last year's Hurricane Irene and October snowstorm. And among those trees may be some of New Yorker's favorites. Doug Blonsky, president of the Central Park Conservancy, said among the hundreds of Central Park trees that became Sandy's victims were a popular 120-year-old swamp white oak near the mall and a willow next to the Lasker Pool. Now, willows always seem to come down. Weeping willow trees are particularly susceptible to high winds and having their roots flooded. And in fact, we lost a very popular one on 9th Street in Alphabet City last year to Irene, and even had a funeral. That's how much people cared about it. So you can imagine what devastation Sandy brought. Now, Forrest, going back to him, said one of his favorite spots at the Botanical Garden, a valley in the protected forest, was changed forever when an American beech was blown over and took out 5 or 6 other trees like a game of dominoes. The city has been in the midst of a campaign to plant 1 million trees. Gunther said the idea was to help with environmental issues such as greenhouse gases, air pollution, and the urban heat island effect. Forrest said it seems ironic that trees, the very things that are supposed to help buffer climate change, are now examples of the havoc it can wreak. But, he said, that shouldn't make us afraid of trees or less willing to plant trees. Yeah, I guess there is a fear of trees out there now. Hadn't thought of that. What do they call it, tree phobia? What is that? It's not something that has no basis in reality either, if you see what's happened around here. He said each tree that came down was home to birds, insects, and animals you wouldn't associate with New York City, like great horned owls. He said at least 286 trees were uprooted or otherwise destroyed at the Bronx Garden. 271 others were damaged enough that their survival is questionable. This is the most wholesale destruction of trees at Garden, especially in the native forest, on record. It was worse than the Great Hurricane of 1944. And on Long Island, we were just destroyed, said New York State Parks spokesman Randy Simons, estimating thousands upon thousands of trees came down. At the Planting Fields Arboretum, which is a state park in Oyster Bay, on Long Island's North Shore, Director Vincent Simeon said, we're certainly not going to stop planting the way we plant, but we did learn that 70-mile-per-hour winds seems to be the breaking point. With Irene, our trees did pretty well, but now we've got hundreds damaged or destroyed. He said he's already planning for spring. Sometimes a tree falls and the vista opens up and you have an opportunity to do something different. Larry Hajna, spokesman for New Jersey's Department of Environmental Protection, said big stands of evergreens that were planted in the 1930s by the Civilian Conservation Corps toppled during Sandy. For 70 or 80 years, they had no problems, but this storm came along, and that was more than enough, he said. The Bartlett Arboretum in Stamford, Connecticut, is considering taking some drastic measures before the next big storm. It said last year it lost century-old chestnut trees, and during Sandy, a 100-foot-tall, 120-year-old white pine crashed down onto a cottage where a staffer was living. It was one of a matching pair, and now the other one is there, and with all the trees we've lost, the wind buffer is eliminated, said Executive Director Peter Savareen. We're going to have to look at taking it down. It's sad, but we have to look ahead, he said. In 2 years, we've had 2 100-year storms and 2 freak snowstorms. Exciting times. You know, I was just thinking about this because where I was during the storm, a number of trees came down, a number of large trees. You weren't even aware of how many came down until the day after where you were walking around just taking it all in. And it made me wonder, you know, so many people were hurt, injured, killed by falling trees. You think that somehow you'll be protected. If you're inside your car, a tree will just bounce off the roof. And it doesn't work that way. It'll crash right through. They're heavy. They really are very, very heavy. If you try picking up a tree, you'll find that out. Same thing with the roof of a house, as we learned in many sad cases. But I was just wondering, you know, how many people can say this, you know, in various parts of the world, temperatures go down, temperatures go up, there's flooding, there are storms, but how many people can say that if they were standing in this particular spot right next to their house, they would be killed just for standing there at that moment, not standing there all night long in sub-zero temperatures where you'd freeze to death or standing there while floodwaters go over your head and drown you. No, just standing there for that one moment, and a tree would fall and completely crush you in an instant. And it really makes you respect nature and respect trees and realize that it's not so safe, not as safe as you might think, especially in situations like this. It can just change in an instant. And I also, I was reading in one of our papers that basically a list of the people in the area, in Long Island vicinity that lost their lives due to this storm. And it was really, it was incredible. The guy who was crushed by a tree while trying to trim the very same one, to it had fallen on top of a diner in Hauppauge, and by cutting it, it just went the wrong way, and he was pinned underneath it. People who happened to be out at the wrong time or were swept into the sea. You know, people who got into fatal crashes because the lights weren't working and people weren't looking where they were going. So many other instances. And you realize, you know, these are our people. These are our neighbors. These people could be us. And just simply a decision, going down a particular road or thinking that you can move an object out of the way, or just standing in a particular place at a particular time. It could happen to anybody. And it just it was pretty sobering to read all of that and to realize that these are people that are very close by and just were victims, whether it's carbon monoxide poisoning from generators or being electrocuted by falling wires, all kinds of ways that you can be a victim, thinking that it can't happen to you. Well, it can. And Sandy is certainly a wake-up call. All right, let's move into some more happy news, and we'll try to take some phone calls. The phone number, for those of you taking notes and preparing to call us in the next, say, 10 minutes or so, 631-632-6901. That's country code 1 for those of you outside the area, outside the country, that is. And you probably have to dial 1 anyway, so, yeah, why not? Here's some good news. Good news. There is now high-speed rail service between Dwight and Pontiac. Now, the bad news is that Dwight and Pontiac are nowhere near here, but they do exist. They're real. And it just kind of happened. Almost overnight. Illinois Transportation Secretary Ann Schneider and Amtrak officials have announced 110-mile-per-hour rail service has begun on a 15-mile segment of the Chicago-St. Louis corridor. And that announcement is a major step towards the establishment of a high-speed rail network in Illinois. And that's certainly good news. I mean, 110 miles an hour, I know it's not as fast as places like Japan and Germany. Yes, I realize this. But it is a step. It is a step, and if it works out, and there's no reason why it wouldn't, we'll see more, and we'll see faster, and we'll see bigger, too. Yeah, 15 miles is ridiculous, I know. If you go 110 miles an hour, and it's only a 15 miles, I don't can't do the math, but it'll happen very quickly. Anyway, this next-generation rail system gives passengers a safer, more reliable way to travel across Illinois and connect with family this holiday season, said Governor Quinn. Today's announcement, and that announcement came on the 23rd of November, by the way, today's announcement demonstrates significant progress on this major transportation initiative that will continue to boost Illinois' economy and make sure our state has the best rail system in the nation. All right, well, good luck with that. But, you know, it's not too hard, I guess, to achieve, considering the state of the rail system in other states. So starting last Thursday, Amtrak Lincoln Service trains were operating at a maximum speed of 110 miles per hour between Dwight and Pontiac. These include northbound trains, write this down, northbound trains 300, 302, and 304, and southbound trains 301, 305, and 307. My question is, where is train 303? Yeah. Other Amtrak trains on the Chicago-St. Louis corridor will continue to operate at 79-mile-an-hour top speeds, including the Texas Eagle. In addition, select Amtrak Lincoln service trains will have free Amtrak Connect Wi-Fi service throughout the coaches, business class seating, and cafes. Passengers are advised to look for the Illinois High-Speed Rail logo and Amtrak Connect posters on trains 300, 301, 304, and 305. Anyway, bit by bit, a network is being built, and this is the first actual sign of something being finished that I've seen. Certainly there's progress being made in California and in the Northeast Corridor, hopefully down in Florida, various other places as well, and we'll see. We'll see if that gets anywhere. Meanwhile, maybe a step backwards here, because they're instituting Bolt buses. You know what Bolt buses are, those super cheap buses that go from city to city. They're actually instituting that from here, Suffolk County, to Manhattan. Yeah, that's starting on December the 10th. The Orange Passenger Coach Bus Company moves about 40,000 riders throughout the Northeast. And what they're going to be doing is they'll be going from Ronkonkoma, Huntington Park and Ride in Melville, and the Hilton Garden Inn in Riverhead. They'll be taking that to the east side of Midtown Manhattan. The fare is going to be $1. All right, just for the first week. Okay, fine, but still, $1 is pretty amazing. And it's probably going to be faster than the train, too, because our trains move so slowly. So maybe this is a kick in the ass the LIRR needs to actually do something about speed, do something about efficiency. They do respond to kicks in the asses, by the way, because they had the gall to say that they weren't going to permit ticket refunds for the period where they themselves shut down the network. So basically, if you had a ticket and it expired at a particular day and time, and there were no trains during that entire week, as was the case out here, well, tough. You could get a refund, but they charge you a $10 refund fee, which pretty much wipes out the refund. And they said, yeah, it would be too much work for us to do it any other way. Well, of course, people were pretty upset by that, and they magically reversed their decision. Well, they didn't reverse it. They said, yeah, it was a communication error. we didn't mean to say that. But you did say that, and you were wrong, and let's move on and not be so stupid in the future. All kinds of crazy things that our mass transit system gets away with, such as having tickets expire in the first place. You know, they had it fairly recently so that tickets expired, I think, within 2 weeks of you buying them. In other words, you pay a lot of money to get a ticket to go from one place to another, and 2 weeks from then, if you don't use it, it's of no value anymore. Does that make any sense? I mean, you've bought it. It's yours. Why does it lose value? You should be able to use it whenever you want. And eventually there was enough outrage about that where they extended it, I think, to a few months. Still not long enough. Still not as long as it used to be. And you have to wonder how they get away with these things. All right, well, it's going to go into delay here. I haven't done this in a little while. And when we come back, we will be able to take phone calls at area code 631, phone number 632-6901. Again, country code 1 for those of you outside the United States. Let's see if we can do this smoothly.
Hi, this is Jan Hammer, and I'm talking to you on WUSB Stony Brook, the most dangerous station in the nation.
Well, maybe that was one of the smoothest ones yet. It's entirely possible. I said the country code was 1. I was just thinking, you know, back in the day when we called Marvin Miller, tried to call Marvin Miller, got Marvin Miller instead, we would never have been able to conceive of getting phone calls from different countries, having people listen to us in some way, other than maybe somebody calling on a telephone and holding it up to a speaker. There was no way you could hear a radio station throughout the world, and now, of course, you can, through the magic of the Internet and WUSB.FM. So, wherever you are in the world, you can call us now. If you're local, you don't have to dial the area code. You know that, though. If you're local, you should know that. Let's start from the beginning. If you're on campus, all you have to do is dial 26901. If you're anywhere in Suffolk County, you just have to dial 632-6901. If you're in the United States, you just have to dial 1-631-632-6901. If you're inside an office, you might have to dial 9 first before any of that. And if you're outside the country, you'll probably dial 00 to get international and then dial 1-631-632-6901. So I think I've covered all the possibilities. And now I look at a phone that's not ringing at all because I've probably confused everybody or just annoyed people with the controversial remarks about ring-dings and various other things. So I have trouble to go into delay, and it's expensive, too. So please, folks, call in and share your opinions on various things going on in the world today, such as, the uprising in Egypt. Yeah, it's happening all over again. I don't know what possibly motivates somebody to grab more power than anybody should have and expect that a country that has just had a revolution is going to let that go unremarked. So, yeah, there's that going on in the world. People are swarming in Tahrir Square again, calling on President Mohamed Morsi to roll back his decree on presidential powers or resign. And that's really, really getting big. I was watching a live feed of that earlier, and the place is just filling up with people. This after he announced that he was just going to take more power and not be answerable to anybody, because, well, certain things just needed to be done. It's a lot easier if nobody gets in the way. He said his edicts are beyond the reach of judges in what critics call an unprecedented power grab. A statement Monday night that appeared to at least partially limit the scope of the decree did not seem to shake the anger of people that are upset by this, and rightfully so. So, yeah, there's that. We can discuss that or a number of other things going on in the world. We talked about the high-speed rail. We talked about the Helstis controversy. We talked about Sandy. We talked about all kinds of things. Nobody. Wow, this is amazing. I don't think this has ever happened before. Usually somebody calls in. 631-632-6901, unless the phones aren't working or something. Well, I have 10 minutes to kill here. This is why I usually don't go into delay, because I make a fool of myself and wind up having to struggle and kill time. Okay, well, you know, once I start reading something, I'm going to continue reading it, and there's not much that can be done to get me to do something else. So let's... is that a real phone call? All right. Let's see if somebody's actually out there. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. You took pity on me, I see. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Port Jeff right now.
Port Jeff. How are things holding up in Port Jeff?
Well, it's wet, rainy, and just a really, really not a cool evening.
Well, you know, rain is kind of nice, I think. It's sort of peaceful, unless it's flooding your house.
No, it's not doing that. I got people on the South Shore who have had to deal with that.
Yeah, well, I really feel sorry for them, having the floods coming and destroying their homes. But tonight's kind of a gentle rain, you know, it's kind of, it's November after all. It could be snow, and I would prefer that, actually. But, you know, as long as you're not being made uncomfortable by it, I think we can enjoy it.
Yeah, actually, I thought it was supposed to be snow. I remember the news last night, but they said it was supposed to be snow.
In the West, it was, but not Long Island, not yet, anyway.
Ah,
yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. I just got myself a new television set, and
uh-huh.
You know, I haven't had TV in years because I find it boring.
It hasn't changed, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So I went, you know, to the cable place, and I'm looking around. Excuse me. And their packages are terrible. Like, you can't get anything good. In order to get, like, a really decent channel, you got to spend a lot of money. What do you know about possibly getting a satellite dish from another country and actually using it?
Well, when you say another country, what are you referring to? Are you referring to a huge dish that gets open-air transmissions, or are you referring to some kind of commercial package?
I was thinking more of commercial package. I don't think they even, those big CKU band antennas, I don't even think they use those anymore. And, you know, I don't think anybody would, you know, that.
They are still used, but you have to know what you're doing, and less and less seems to be available on them. The wild feeds are really hard to find. That's where you basically see news anchors, what they do during commercials and uncensored remarks and things like that. The problem you're facing, well, first of all, by the way, I got a really good package on my cable system, but it doesn't exist anymore, where I only got certain channels. I wasn't getting CNN, for instance. That was blocked out. I was getting Euronews. I was getting BBC World, and I was paying much, much less. And that package no longer exists. And for some reason, they've opened it up, and now I'm getting all those other channels, but I'm still paying. I'm grandfathered into the old rate. Now, when you say things are boring, probably on the commercial networks, that is certainly true. But if you can get something like HBO, there are all kinds of really good things there.
Really? I'm not a big movie person.
No, I'm talking about series. I'm talking about original presentations, productions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, things like The Wire or Tremé or Breaking Bad or all kinds of original productions that aren't on commercial television, or at least not to the degree that something on broadcast networks is controlled. So it's out there. There is quality out there if you get the right, you know, the right sources.
I'm going to have to look into that then, because, you know, I see all those silly movie channels, and I'm like, this is all rubbish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it costs more, too, unfortunately, but it's as good as anything you might see overseas as well. Now, as far as, I also have the Canadian dish, which might be more interest to you, but you do have to have an address in Canada to be able to have that billed to you. The dish will work here because it's a geostationary satellite above the equator, so you'll actually get better reception in the States than you will in Canada, and you'll get all kinds, the thing is you'll get more commercial television than you can imagine. You'll also get Canadian content, which oftentimes is better, but we don't like to admit that. And you'll get more international as well. So that's a possibility.
Well, that's what I kind of would like, actually. Some of the international channels that Cablevision offers are actually $25 each.
Yeah, those are other special international packages. But I do recommend, Cablevision is the only cable network I know, cable system I know, that has Euronews on Channel 103 and BBC World on Channel 104. which are two excellent channels that it's all you really need if you want to find out what's going on in the world.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You'll have to look into that then.
Yeah. There are options. You just have to do a little bit of research. As far as the content between satellite and cable, it's pretty much the same. You'll get some channels on satellite that you won't get on cable and vice versa. Like, you'll get Link TV on DirecTV, which is a great international channel, but you don't get that on cable. But then you don't get BBC World or Euronews on DirecTV or on Dish Network. So, I wish we were in a world where we could just pick and choose the channels we wanted from the master list. And, of course, you can get all of this online, or a lot of it online anyway, but it hasn't quite gotten to the state where you can just, as easily as turning a channel indicator, tuned to these channels. You have to know the website, you have to interface it with your TV set, or just watch things on your computer instead of a TV set. So it's a little bit tricky.
Yeah, that's what I was, thinking about, watching it online and that whole bit, watching the BBC and all like that. That's what I'm interested in. I'd like to know, other than what's happening in, the five boroughs, Long Island, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, it's a problem with American systems in general. For instance, on the Canadian system that I have, I'm able to get BBC World, I'm able to get CNN International, which you can't get in this country unless you have Time Warner Cable, because they own CNN. Or Al Jazeera English, I'm able to get that as well. And I think most systems in this country are afraid to carry Al Jazeera, which is actually a really good channel. You can also see things like Russia Today, which is an English-language news channel that's really very biased and not very good as far as accuracy goes, but interesting to watch, and I think important to see what perspectives are being presented.
What is the name of the satellite dish, the Canadian one, satellite dish that you have?
Well, there are two. The one I have is ExpressView. There's also one that's run by Rogers, I believe. Those are the two companies up there.
Oh, Rogers. Don't they also have cable TV as well?
Yes, they both. ExpressView is part of Bell up there, and Rogers has cable as well as satellite.
Oh.
So, yeah, they have the same kind of media monopolies that we do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right, well, I appreciate that. I'll, when I get home, I will fire up the computer and I'll give it a look.
Yeah, and the TV you have probably is able to receive digital signals as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I finally threw out my CRT.
Yeah.
Got a big 60-some inch TV set.
I'm not really impressed with this whole digital television movement that has been forced upon us. You either get a channel in perfect clarity or you get nothing. Gone are the days where you could pull in a distant signal and be able to make out what people are saying through static. And that's I think that's a real step backwards, especially in a time of crisis like what we just went through, where you might not have full power and you might just need to hear something that's a weak signal. In addition, if you can receive channels, there are all kinds of sub-channels now. Like, for instance, Channel 2 has, I think, two sub-channels, but it's mostly crap. It's mostly either infomercials or just repeating news loops. It hasn't really improved the quality of the programming at all.
Really? I didn't think of that.
Yeah. So, it's never really a step forward in regards to that. I recommend, getting a region-free DVD player and just finding all kinds of cool things that exist from other countries that you can play. Like, for instance, being able to get the series Shameless from the UK, not the United States version, which is also a good one. That's something that you would get on Showtime here in this country. But overseas, there's a British version that's been going on, I think, for 8 or 9 years now. And, of course, nobody in this country can watch it because, A, it's not sold here. You have to buy it online on a UK site. But if you do buy it, odds are your DVD player won't play it because it's a different region. If you have a region-free player, though, you can play films and TV series from all over the world. And that's where your options really start to open up.
Oh, well, I'm way ahead of you on that. I've had a region-free player at the Philips, a region-free player for about 2 years now.
That's great. And And I hope you're getting material from different parts of the world as well to make use of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was the case.
Great.
But I appreciate your help, though. That was actually very good of you.
All right. Well, no problem. Thanks Thanks for your call.
Not a problem.
All right. I think I think that's all that we have time for. Not that they're exactly beating down the doors here to call in. So write to us instead, then. otw@2600.com. And as we go back live now, that's going to have to do it as far as how to reach us with comments or suggestions or critiques of various sorts. We'll keep an eye out for all kinds of other developments as far as alternative news sources and different ways of accomplishing things and some of the strange things that are happening in this planet of ours. That's going to do it. Manuel for Off the Wall. Thanks, everybody, for listening, for writing in, and for those occasional people who call in as well. We're back again next week, and I believe there's an Off the Wall, Off the Hook tomorrow on the other station. We'll see about that. And we'll be back again next week at this very same time. Have a good night.